So the theme that we're using for this retreat are three things to cultivate and practice, and three things to see. And it turns out that the three things to cultivate and the three things to see are opposites. That we cultivate certain qualities so that we can see the presence of something that's kind of like the opposite of them. So we cultivate stability, we cultivate well-being, and we cultivate confidence. So we're in a good position to be able to see in a useful way, to see instability, unhappiness, and lack of confidence, kind of. But more specifically, we cultivate stability so we can see the changing and constant and permanent nature of experience. We cultivate well-being so we can see the dukkha aspect of our experience, the suffering aspect, the stressful aspect, the unsatisfactory aspect of our experience. And we cultivate confidence in order to see what is called not-self, the impersonal quality of the things that make up our experience. And the value of cultivating those first before seeing these, having these insights, is that it's a lot easier to have those insights and have those insights be productive and useful for us, have them be liberating, if we've cultivated these first other things first. And you can probably well imagine that there are people for whom their life has been hellish, and maybe they've had a lot of instability in their life, grew up in war zones and difficult family situations and violence, and had no stability. There are people who are constantly moving in different places easily. I changed schools 12 times in 12 years of grade school. So, it's a lot of moving, right? So there are people who have this instability. And to tell them that, everything's impermanent and this is good news and deal with it, it's kind of like bad news. It's like pushes them over the edge. It's like too much. There are people who are tremendously unhappy for good reason. They live under terrible conditions of oppression and challenges, and not of their own making, and it's very difficult. And to hear from some of these Buddhist people that, life is suffering, which is not quite really what Buddha said, but that you hear that kind of being said, or that's kind of almost what people hear. Everything's a suffering, all experience, everything's characterized by suffering. And like, what hope is there then for these poor people who that's all they've ever had? And some people have tremendous lack of confidence, lack of self-worth, self-esteem, their life experience has really undermined any sense of personal efficacy and value. And then to hear that there's not self is also confusing teaching to receive. But to cultivate stability, the real healthy sense of settledness and groundedness and being really here in a strong way, to cultivate a strong sense of well-being that's pervasive, sense of well-being through a whole system, to cultivate a strong sense of confidence in our practice, in ourselves, in our capacity to be, in our worth, in our value to be present for our experience. That allows the mind to not be defensive, to not be afraid, allows the mind not to be reactive to it or confused. It puts us in a condition that allows us to perceive these deep existential truths that Buddhism emphasizes, the three characteristics, in a way that allows those insights to help the mind relax further, let go further, to release in a very deep way. And the point of these insights is not to have the insights. So you don't want to get too caught up in, like, this is like all important to have these insights. That's the point of it all. It's more like the point of the insights is to have, is to be set free. And so we cultivate these things in order to have these insights have value and have impact, a good impact on us. And so a lot of Buddhist practice has to do with cultivating qualities. There's an interesting that in English, when people say, you know, I practice, Buddhists practice, in English-speaking countries, Buddhists do a lot of practicing. You know, practice, practice, practice. Robert Thurman was complained about these American Buddhists. He said, all they do is practice, practice, practice. When's the performance? And but if you ask some an English-speaking person, many of them, what do you practice? A good number of them will reply like that they're practicing a technique. I practice mindfulness, I practice concentration, I practice metta. It's a technique. But there's not exactly a word in Pali that fits really well as a match for the R word practice. Maybe there might be, but the most common word used for in Pali to describe what people are doing when they do what in English we do when we practice is bhavati. And bhavati means to cultivate. Bhavana is cultivation. And if you ask someone, what are you cultivating? You get a different answer. I guess you could say I'm cultivating mindfulness or concentration. But what are you cultivating kind of points not to a technique or points more to what are you developing inside? How are you changing? How are you maturing? And we're developing and maturing, among many things, stability and well-being and confidence. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about stability. But I guess even before I say that, I want to say a few other things that about this wonderful heart we have. That I think it's helpful to understand or appreciate or that this very famous expression that Dharma practice goes against the stream. It goes against the common currents of culture and the common currents of how people think in our society and how we're trained to think. And so I say that because it's very easy to engage in practice, and Dharma cultivation with the mindset that it goes with the stream, that we're kind of going along with the old habits, the old cultural conditionings, the old priorities and what's important. And one of them is to practice as if, you know, it's all about me, myself, and mine. And, you know, that it's my practice, I'm the one who's doing it, I have to attain, I hope people are noticing, you know, and you know, that I hope everyone's noticing how much I'm empty of self. That would be great. And I hope they praise me because or people have very little sense of efficacy in their interpersonal relationships and don't really have intimacy or strong connections, and so they want something to satisfy that hole, that emptiness. So they're reaching into Buddhist practice, even in Buddhist attainments, in order to fill some kind of gap they have and hole, which is not usually that healthy to do it that way. But you know, still acquisitiveness, getting something for me, you know, doing something. It's so easy. And that's kind of going with the stream. But to a different mindset, different approach, different interest, you know, it's hard to understand how to do that, how to think differently. And you know, what's a different way of approaching all this? So one of the ways is to just have a big question mark next to yourself, next to your heart, where you don't necessarily validate everything that you believe and think and do. You're open to some new possibility. You're open to something different. What else is here? And that's particularly useful, I think, the first day of the retreat, because it's common for a good percentage of people on the first day of the retreat to suffer more than they expected, one way or the other, and to be disappointed in themselves for not being more concentrated, to be angry that they're sleepy and they can't focus, or to be dismayed at, I'm still thinking about that. But that kind of being discouraged or dismayed or upset about our condition, I'd like to propose, is the old mindset. It belongs to the old way of thinking and of how I'm supposed to do things and succeed at things, or who I am, and this defines me in some way, and this presents me in a bad light, or whatever the mindset is. So we do these things, it's okay, but just put a question mark. Like, is that really so? You know, is there another way? Just that. You don't have to necessarily even know what you're doing and what your mind is, you know, your mindset you have, you're looking at it. But just kind of like, what? What is this? Or is this really so? Or is there another way? And so much of our life is subconscious. So much of our life is a deep kind of wellsprings inside. And we don't even know what the right question is yet, or the right kind of place to touch and be with. So I think having a lot of respect and care for ourselves and love for ourselves, for what we're up against and what we're working with and who we are. And that is a question mark. You know, maybe what I see and what I know is not really the full picture. Maybe it's not really what's the, you know, I need to kind of get so concerned with, wrapped up with, upset with. But as I have a question mark and being still and quiet and be willing to be receptive and find out what's here, and what is in your heart? You know, what if you kind of were able to go 1,000 miles down into your heart? What question might open the door of peace? There's reservoirs of peace. And how would you sit 1,000 miles deep in your heart, in the place where you don't know, to allow that door to open to that peace, or to unlock what's there? So this kind of willingness to kind of not know in some ways and be open to possibility and be open to going against the stream. And this becomes a little bit obvious in the surface of the mind when we see the opposite of stability, when we see how unstable the mind is, or the agitation of the mind. You know, I've been meditating for a very long time, at least one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it, I'm just beginning. But you know, it's, you know, for a long time. And so I still get fooled. One way, kind of, where if I'm going around and being a busy daily life, And I feel pretty good and content and happy, perhaps, and doing all the things I'm doing. And then I go and meditate, and then I find out that actually my mind is pretty agitated. It's spinning, it's caught up in its concerns, or the momentum, and I'm kind of jumping around from thought to thought. And I couldn't see that when I was busy. My life was jumping around, going to different things, because maybe my, you know, it's... It's camouflage then. It just looks like everything else, right? So, you know, you know, it doesn't, you know, I don't see it. This wonderful expression, distracted from my distractions by my distractions. But then you sit and I say, wow, the mind is agitated, my body is agitated, I feel like I'm jumping, I feel like my legs want to bolt, I feel all this restlessness, you know, and my mind is kind of racing and spinning around all these different things. And so I get fooled because I don't, you know, I don't remember that. And then I sit down, oh yeah, this is how it works. This is how it is. And then it takes a while to settle. And on retreats, like coming on retreat, that goes to a whole different degree. Sometimes we settle in the first sitting or two, but we discover kind of deeper, because we get more settled here more quickly than everyday life, even though it doesn't feel that way. We actually tune into and become aware of a lot more of what's going on and has been unattended to. And so sometimes there's a lot more seemingly restless mind or agitated mind in the beginning of a retreat than we kind of expected. And sometimes I've had the conclusion that I must be going backwards. You know, I was better off not being at the retreat, you know, came here to get agitated. But that's not actually what was going on. It was I was waking up to what was really happening, and it was revealing itself and showing itself and getting to know it better. And that's a really healthy process. It's really good to get to know and to see what's happening. And that's the way forward, is to see and understand and acknowledge and not deny and not try to pretend it's not there, or not to be, you know, or to be aversive or be bothered by it and upset by it. But in a certain way, kind of like, yes, okay, this is good. I'm seeing how my mind operates. Fantastic. As opposed to, oh, shit. And, or some other equivalent. And then what I said yesterday, I'd like to reemphasize that, I'll get to it indirectly. Another thing we say in English, I think, that we can very easily, many of us, refer to my mind this, my mind that. But I think that we don't do it so easily off our tongue when we use the word awareness. My awareness, your awareness, you know. We talk about the awareness was there, awareness was strong, it was clear, but there wasn't much awareness. But I don't think we so often put that little, you know, my in front of it. And I think there's a good reason, because there's a sense, because awareness has a quality, as a way of operating naturally without it being something we do so self-consciously, or something we make happen or do or take ownership for, or feel like, you know, we're in charge of. And you can see that because of how easy it is, I don't know, easy, but you know, if you're at all the sleep you need and are pretty relaxed and contented and just sitting doing nothing at all, it's extremely hard to turn the awareness off, you know, and stay conscious. You know, stop being aware. And, you know, if I tell all of you, order all of you, stop being aware, you'd probably be just, it'll just make you even more aware than you are, right? And once you start focusing on it, you know, like you know, you can't bat it away. So awareness is just a natural thing that we do. It's helpful in this practice to create the conditions that allow that awareness to surface and be there. And one kind of a little bit anthropocentric way of saying that is to say that we're trying to create the conditions to where awareness wants to show up. That it wants, it's our friend, and we want to create the conditions so our friend wants to be there. And if it's, oh shit, you know, about what's going on, or you know, your mind is all bothered by things and angry with how things are, or you know, or somehow really selfish or really scared or something, you know, that maybe the awareness doesn't really want to show up. And we have to kind of dredge it up or pull it up, or, you know, we have to work at it somehow. But if our inner life, how we, our attitude and our approach and how we are is, what approach would your inner life have? What qualities of mind or heart do you think that you would need so that your awareness, the awareness that's in you, wants to show up? Like it feels like, oh yeah, like show up in that mind, that would be great. There's space and there's, you know, room for it, and it's not so crowded with all this, I don't know. So you know, we're trying to cultivate a variety of things that help support awareness to be there. And in a sense, there's like two things we're trying to do, and many things we're doing in practice, but to take up saying too much here today, there's what we do and what we allow. And if it's all, if practice is all about only about what we're doing, there's no space to allow something to arise. But if it's only about trusting something will arise, then we might not really create the right conditions or the momentum to allow awareness to arise in a very strong, stable, productive, and useful way. And so we don't want to forfeit all responsibility, but we don't want to take responsibility for everything. And so we show up to practice and cultivate certain things. But while we're doing that, we also have to kind of simultaneously allow for something to happen. If you're wondering if it's raining, we have to open, many people, what they do is they'll open their hand, their palm, and have it towards the sky and see if the drop of rain will fall on the sensitive part of the palm. So we have to do something. We have to do the opening, but we have to allow the sky to provide the drop, right? So those two things happen simultaneously. So we have to kind of both allow ourselves, you know, to show up and be present for experience. We have to, you know, be here and not thinking, maybe let go of our thoughts, so that awareness can arise, or so that concentration can develop, so that we can see clearly what's going on. So that goes against the can go against the stream for some people. This idea of some people, their stream is all about taking responsibility and doing. It's all about what I have to do. And some people, it's all about not doing and just giving up responsibility. So how do we do both? So with stability, one of the ways we do that is first recognizing how we're unstable. The agitation we have in our bodies, agitation we have in our thinking, agitation we have in our hearts, the ways in which we're fragmented and jumping around or restless. And there's layers and layers of this kind of restlessness and agitation in us. And don't underestimate how powerful it is simply to recognize that it's there. A lot of mindfulness practice has to do about clearly recognizing, oh, this is what's happening, this is what's happening. And I think of recognition as learning how to recognize in a useful way is a big part of mindfulness practice. You want to kind of not just recognize, you want to recognize in a useful way. And the useful way is to recognize in a way that gives space for what's there, rather than recognize in a way that's like a sledgehammer to destroy it or somehow trying to put a fire under it to get it going even bigger if it's a good thing. But just the peaceful recognition, a recognition that's not in conflict with what's there. And this ability to be present and aware of our experience, even difficult experience, without being in conflict with it, is a very important part of developing stability. So you might feel very agitated, and so you step back in a sense and see, I'm agitated, I'm restless. Now, how can I be aware of this restlessness so I'm not in conflict with it? What kind of recognition, what's the act of recognition done so that I'm peaceful in recognizing the agitation? And probably every circumstance we're in, there'll be a different answer. How do I recognize this? How am I mindful of this in a way that is useful and present? And to ask that question and do that exploration is beginning to extract, it's a process of beginning to extract ourselves from being identified or preoccupied with what is difficult. If we're glued or entangled with our, you know, mental landscape, it's very hard to practice or very hard to make room and allow for awareness to come or allow for anything good to develop. And so we have to somehow disentangle ourselves from our experience. That doesn't mean we have to get rid of anything, but to be disentangled. And so this, you know, exploring this question, how do I recognize this? How do I be aware of this so that I'm not caught in it? Asking that question begins the process of disentangling. So just, okay, here I am, and my knee hurts, and I'm really, you know, anxious about it, and my mind is spinning a lot. So what would it look like for me to be aware of that painful knee so I'm not in conflict with it, or so that I'm kind of a little bit more peaceful with it? And as we ask that question, we kind of begin looking, well, do I feel it more closely and intimately? Do I step back and feel it from a distance? Do I feel it with a sense of awareness, maybe awareness that's larger, that feels the knee? Or do I have to kind of bring my attention to feel the anxiety that I have? And that's what's important to kind of find out to be with. And should I be aware of the anxiety from a distance, looking at it? Or should I feel the anxiety right in the middle of the anxiety? Should I, look at that, I'm actually aversive to the anxiety. So maybe that's where the attention needs to be. And so there is this kind of very gentle, hopefully very relaxed, unanxious, unhurried, looking at agitation and at restlessness, getting to know it and seeing it. And that process, and doing it and exploring, how do I do that? So in how I'm aware is settling. How I'm aware brings a certain stillness or stability to at least awareness and makes room. One of the remarkable things that can happen on this practice is that by not doing too much, the whole system begins to settle itself. And you know, you all heard many times the analogy of the muddy water that settles if you don't agitate it, if you don't stir it up, and the mud settles to the bottom. And our psychophysical system is tense and agitated and contracted and resistant and clinging and attached and all these different things because something in our system is working, is applying effort. It takes energy to do those things. And energy is, you know, consistent energy is just tiring, it's difficult. Inherent in all this stuff, all the neurosis, all the attachments, all the clinging, all the resistance, inherent in it is a movement towards relaxing and letting go. That's really what it wants. If you take and grip something really hard with your hand and really grip it, you can feel after a while how much work it takes. And after a while, you really want to relax and let go. The hand itself wants to release the grip. And you have to reassert the effort. So this is why part of us, is not to worry too much about being agitated and feeling kind of all this inner instability, but to kind of get out of the way and allow, feel it, be with it, so that it has a chance to settle on its own. I learned early in my practice how useful it is to, or useful for me, at least in my mind, about the first 10 minutes of a sitting, to not worry about how much I'm thinking. I just let myself think, and I do my best to be present and focus, and I kind of let go of my thoughts a little bit, but I'm not worried or concerned, and I just let kind of it do its thing. And I found that was the best condition to allow the mind just to relax and settle on its own. And then once at some point it settled enough, then I could let go more fully. And then there wasn't so much energy in it anymore, and it was okay, let go. And now let's get to work. You know, now I'm ready. But I needed those 10 minutes to kind of let everything chill and cool out. And so, you know, it's just don't do much. Just show up and be present the best you can, but, you know, don't worry too much about things. That's what worked for me. I don't know if that works for you. So if the ideal at the point is to cultivate stability, a good, really good way to learn that is to understand your instability. whatever way that form that takes for you. A busy mind, a racing heart, jumping emotions, you know, agitation that we have in various ways, is to be content to get to know what your flavor of agitation might be, how it is. But also it's possible to cultivate stability directly, not just allow it to happen by settling. And so there's stability of the body, and one of the reasons to take a good posture in meditation and to hold relatively still in meditation is because we're trying to contribute to the meditation a stable physical posture. And the physical stability will translate and support mental stability. And so to be careful with your posture and figure out how to both take a strong posture, upright posture, and then also to relax in that posture, to soften in the posture. For those people who can sit cross-legged upright, I found it very interesting many years ago when I read some kind of physiology study that said there are two postures, human postures, that allow the body to relax deepest. And one is the yoga corpse posture. The second that's equally useful for relaxation is the sitting in cross-legged upright. And some people will think, well, you know, it's nice to sit upright, but I think the really relaxing thing is to kind of sit back into the couch and relax and slump. And it might be true sometimes, but once the body has some strength to it and conditioned and strong, there's something about the alignment of sitting upright that allows the musculatures to relax deepest. As soon as we begin slumping and the shoulders kind of roll and hunch, there's actually less room for the deeper relaxation that can happen in the body. So for those people who can do this, it's a support. People who can't sit this way, it's okay. There's other ways for this works, you know, through the practice. But this is one way to get physical support for this process of stability. And, you know, and having a firm, really feeling the foundation of your body, your feet against the floor or your legs against the mat, and making sure there's a feeling of stability there and contact of something firm and good. And then being embodied in this body. It's so much easier to cultivate stability if we're embodied. And it's very easy in our culture to be disembodied. It's very easy for people who have very difficult emotions to be disembodied. And so a part of practice is coming back into the body and feeling the body and allowing the body to really let the stability and the strength of the body and the vibrancy of the body and the awareness which is within the body, all the senses we have, the sensations we have in there, to allow that to settle and be strong so that we can really feel and sense stability. If we're not connected to the body, then the body's not going to support us. It's not going to create the conditions for physical conditions that make it second nature to be present for our experience. So you can find some way to be rooted in your body and come back in your body and feel your body. And take time to really connect and settle in your body. I've known people for whom they've sat down to meditate and they've thought about it only as a mental act, only as something they're going to do with their mind. And they kind of disconnect to their body and not really hear for their body. And anything below the neck then, you know, is not spiritual or not important or not where it's at. But if we're one whole, mind, body, whole, we want to, you know, be connected to the body and feel it and sense it and open up to it and become alive in it. And that provides, that becomes an avenue for not only stability, but it also becomes an avenue, vehicle, for feeling well-being and confidence. Because happiness and confidence are not just mental events. They're psychophysical events, psychophysical things that happen. And so the stability and presence we get in the body then supports us, the cultivation and the growth of other really good things that can happen. And then there's the stability of our thinking. And, you know, you probably have heard people speak in agitated ways, fast ways, jumping around ways, changing subjects a lot, you know, and just, you know, it's hard to track what they're saying and all that. Chances are that for some of us, if we talked out loud what we're thinking, people might think that of us. Sometimes we do what's called discursive thinking. There's layers of thinking, different kinds of thinking that we do. And discursive thinking is when we're having a conversation in our mind. When we're a conversation with someone else in our mind, or we're telling ourselves stories, or reviewing a story that happened, or fantasizing about a future, making up stories about a wonderful future, or just plain and simple having a fantasy. That's kind of elaborate. And that's a relatively coarse form of thinking. And that form of thinking is generally not useful for meditation. And it usually belongs to a more agitated, unstable aspect of the mind. And there's other thinking. You know, there's very simple sentences we say that say, oh, look, my knee hurts. That's not a discursive thought. That's just a recognition of what's happening. And it might be in the form of some words the mind says quietly. And that can be done without much agitation. It's just very simple. It's just, you know, just the facts, you know. Oh, the knee hurts. And I wonder if maybe this is the time I should bring mindfulness to my knee. And I wonder, would it be useful to kind of be really intimate with that pain and really feel the details of it? Or would it be useful to kind of create a really wide, spacious, open awareness and just receive that pain into the awareness? So having those kinds of very simple queries and thoughts can be done spaciously, relaxedly, and doesn't have to involve a lot of agitation or a lot of busyness of the mind. And so that might be actually supportive and helpful up to a point. But if, because it's trying to figure out something and, you know, and trying to understand something, at some point it becomes too much. And at some point you might feel that this is not helpful anymore. This is keeping me at a distance or keeping me kind of unsettled. And then it's good to know, recognize that there's even subtler thoughts to do. There's just a recognition there's pain. You don't even say it's the pain in the knee, because that's too many words. You know, it's a little bit too complicated. You know, it's a little bit too abstract. It's just pain. There's pain, hot, pulsing, burning, twisting, searing, stabbing. All kinds of great, you know, just a simple recognition. Or there's pain and it's moving around, jumping around. And it's just a very, very simple, quiet recognition. So I go through those three different levels in order to bring us back to this, you know, the discursive thinking level. If you're involved in discursive thoughts and conversations, and can you gently, lovingly continue those conversations in a quieter voice in your mind? Could you kind of talk in a quiet, like, you imagine you're in the library. And can you kind of like, if you need to, you know, you can't, sometimes you can't just let go of it, it comes back, right? Well, just keep doing it. But can you like think, just imagine you're really in the library and you're sitting close to the librarian station. You know, so you want to be quiet. You know, and just kind of, you know, a whisper in your mind that, you know, the conversation or the fantasy, just a whisper. And chances are that a few things will happen. One is you'll get calmer. You know, you talk in a calmer way in your mind, you'll get calmer. You know, it's like you're thinking about, you know, how terrible it's going to be at work on next Monday and the terrible meeting and your boss, and you have fantasy and you're a little bit alarmed and agitated, and then you start thinking, oh, yes. Yes, I think that's going to be a difficult meeting. waiting. If the boss says X, I think I'll say Y. Yeah, it'll be, you know. And pretty soon, you know, it's when you're whispering, you know, with a librarian nearby, you know, things get quieter and it's, you get calmer with it maybe, and it just changes the inner landscape than if you just continue down the stream in the normal way. The other thing that might happen is when you whisper quietly is you start thinking it's ridiculous. in a way that it's hard to do if you just go along with your usual way of thinking, you know, because it's so much authority, it's common, it's, you know, it's like this is what's supposed to happen, or, you know, we get fooled by it. And so we might think this is, you know, this, I don't need to do this. And the other thing that might happen is that we start seeing that maybe it's not so valuable to do this. So to relax the mind, the thinking mind, so, but don't make it all or nothing, just a little bit, step by step. Can you, yes, you're allowed to think if you can't stop, but think in a calmer way. You know, whisper to, you know, imagine you're talking to the librarian. I mean, then you really want to be quiet. So, something maybe. So there's mental calm and stability. And the mental stability of the mind takes the form of the mind not jumping around a lot. It doesn't change subjects a lot. And that's one of the reasons why concentration is a useful practice, where we choose one thing and kind of hang out with it and stay with it, so that it is an antidote to the mind jumping around and picking up new subjects and racing after things. And for some people, breathing is a nice concentration practice. And kind of just stay with the breath and just stay there and stay there, maybe count the breath, in order to begin settling and relaxing the agitation of the mind, the jumping around the mind. So the mind gathers together, it becomes settled on one thing. Every time you let go of your thoughts and come back to the breathing, in an incremental, maybe small way, you are letting go of some of the energy to keep thinking those thoughts. And slowly, slowly, by letting go many times, many times, coming back and staying with focus on the breath, that that the agitated energy that keeps us thinking begins to quiet down. The force, the interest, the fascination, or whatever it might be. And the mind, as the mind becomes more stable, it tends to become clearer, more clarity. And at some point, it's just easy to be here because the mind is so stable that we don't get pushed around by things. It's like ballast of a boat. The boat doesn't capsize because it has a strong keel, heavy keel. At some point, when we're really centered in our body and the mind is stable, then all kinds of things can happen and we're not troubled by it. We're kind of stay stable. We can stay on course. And then there's a deeper stability of the heart, where the heart doesn't feel anxious about things. The heart feels like it's really here and at rest, at peace, settled with itself. And that maybe is kind of an emotional stability. And when this kind of a deep inner sense of being stable and settled, still, soft, begins to happen, there's an interesting thing that can happen with the problems in our life that we're struggling with, that we might have all kinds of things we think are big issues and that we have to fix them and solve them and do things with them. But with enough stability and some of the other things we're cultivating, like happiness and well-being and confidence, sometimes the things we think we need to have happen are things that have to stop or be fixed. We see it from a different perspective, and we realize we don't have to be so concerned about it. They're not that important after all. There's something else that's much more important. What's more important and more valuable is the sense of well-being, of peace, of stability, of really being here. It's one of the great pleasures of life to have an ability to have awareness, attention stable, doesn't want to go off and run away, and feel the goodness of that, feel how satisfying that is, to feel that, why would I leave this to talk about the resentments I have at work one more time? You know, I've done this 10,000 times, my resentment thoughts, and, you know, it didn't get me anywhere. And it takes me away from this feeling of wholeness and goodness and being really here, rooted in the present moment, as if the present moment is home. Present moment is where I belong. And so, you know, that those thoughts about resentment just don't have any value. Maybe I don't have to solve the problem. Maybe I just let it go, or let it drift away, or let it dissolve. With practice, sometimes our problems don't get solved, they get dissolved. And that goes against the grain, against the current of how the mind often thinks, where I think that, you know, it thinks that there's a problem, I have to fix it, there's a danger, I have to make myself safe. And when we go against the stream, we discover some inherently good place of practice, of stability, of inner wholeness, of collectedness. And the contrast teaches us this is where to be. And those other things seemed really important in the agitated state. But now that I'm agitated, they don't seem so important anymore. And I think I just, they're overrated. And that's one of the things that can happen with practice. So be forewarned that you'll discover that many of your concerns are overrated. And that's good news. And then there's more ease with them, more relaxation, more letting go, less concern with them, less troubled by them and less bothered by them. We give them less authority over our lives. So one of the ways of cultivating stability in the retreat, there's many ways. One of the ways is to be as simple at the retreat as you can. Don't try to do a lot. Some people come and retreat and have the whole agenda of things they want to do. This is that place where they're going to finally get their eating in order. This is the place where they're going to, you know, really finally, they can't do yoga at home, but this is the place they're going to start their yoga practice and really get into it, you know, and really get good. Or, you know, some people come with long lists, the books they're going to read, get enough exercise, and I'm going to do, you know, this, I couldn't do much meditation at home for the last year, but so I'm going to do all the different meditation practices I've ever read about from this retreat, and, you know, just have to go through the list. I have, you know, check. You know, the idea is don't do a lot. One of the ways to become stable is trust the practice, do the practice, have the continuity of practice that Inez talked about, and live a very simple life so the mud can settle. Be very simple so that you're not reinforcing the agitation by doing a lot. And even though, you know, so try to do as simple and quiet as you can be, as is reasonable. Of course, you have to do things. And of course, there's doing some things which are settling. It might be after a meal that's very settling to go for a walk and around the grounds or something. But the principle of being simple as you can, and is one way. Another way of developing stability is a little harder to do automatically or just because you hear about it. But it really helps a lot if you can pull it off to not be bothered by anything. And in particular, don't be bothered by anything you think. You don't even be bothered by the fact that you're thinking. This is one of the great advices that I heard when I was at Tassajara. Someone had, gave the advice, when you meditate, don't be bothered by your thoughts. And I found that was so wonderful. It was a lot easier to have the thoughts settle and get quiet when I wasn't bothered by them. And what I discovered was that by being bothered by them, I was actually fueling them. And actually, because, you know, it's actually giving them energy to keep thinking, and, you know. And so it's kind of a Aikido thing, you know. If you want your thoughts to settle and or not think those things, just let them be and don't be bothered by them. But all kinds of things, don't be bothered. Don't get agitated. Don't try not to get worked up. Try to stay quiet. and then also try not to look for trouble. You know, that's one of the reasons why, you know, you're not supposed to look at your devices on retreat. People have told me that they had to look at their device and something or other. I just had to look at it one email, but then I noticed this other one, and it took me 2 days to settle down after, literally, because they get this message, and, you know, and in this ripe situation of the retreat, they get the message from someone, and it's like, you know, I wish I didn't look. So don't go looking for things. Be very careful that you don't kind of go searching for things and to become agitating, to agitate you. And then consider for yourself, in your situation, what inner landscape, what inner way of being could you bring on that would be supportive and helpful for you so that you can kind of settle down, be more settled, be more stable, be more rooted, be more grounded. Not because you're kind of, you know, forcing yourself to be that way, but what level, you know, what inner, what attitude of mind, what approach and feeling and relationship to your experience could you kind of cultivate and bring about that would help you kind of just really be here, really in this place, today, this hour, this minute, that the world that you're in is the world of the present moment, not the world of tomorrow or yesterday or fantasy, but to really to be here. When you're standing at the meal, the buffet table to serve your food, to really be there with your plate, with your food, with serving yourself, as opposed to being there and looking at what everybody else is serving themselves. That person's steak took too much, and I can't believe that person took so little. And, you know, that's not settling, that's agitating. But if it's just you and your tofu, you know, just you and your plate and the serving utensils and the tofu. And so when you put your spatula into the tofu, you feel the softness of it and you feel the texture of it and, you know, the wonderful brown sauce and, you know, just you and the sauce and what comes up and, you know, just like, that's a simple world. It's complicated enough, but, you know, it's a lot simpler than what other people are doing with their tofu. So to get really here, simple, just this moment, this experience, you'll find that that's the door to greater and greater stability, steadiness, settledness. That your system, your psychophysical system, actually wants to move towards steadiness, stability, stillness. Because to not be that takes work and effort and agitation. That's the direction it wants to go. So what can you do to support that direction? What can you do to make space, to make room for the natural momentum the body has to relax and settle? And one of the ways you can do is to be present in the simplicity of this moment, here, now, this experience, walking down the steps, just walking down the steps, that experience, walking across the community room floor, just walking, not walking and thinking about which form of tea you're going to have today. Don't think about tea until you get to the tea. just the walking. And then when you get to the T, just the T. It's a simple life. It goes against the stream of being sophisticated, you know, and having wonderful thoughts and planning everything out or doing things. But trusting the simplicity of the moment, the simplicity of just being here for this experience, trusting the value of just here. These are great ways of cultivating stability, stillness, softness, steadiness, so that we get the vantage point, stable, still vantage point, in order to watch how thoroughly our present moment experience is flowing, unfolding and changing moment by moment. And that's the topic of in some days. Finally, thank you very much for your practice today. It's not easy to do this kind of practice, especially the first day. I have tremendous respect for what people are up against, the challenges, and you all are here and still here, and I feel very appreciative of you, and just wanted to express my gratitude for what you're doing. In a few minutes, we'll post, actually it's already posted, the sign-ups for the practice discussion for the next 2 days. The way it works is there's enough slots for tomorrow and the day after tomorrow for everyone to have one practice discussion, one meeting with either Inez or I. There's 43 of all of you. There's 43 spots up there. So don't sign up for more than one, because then you'll take someone else's spot too. Don't do Inez and I. Just do one or the other. And we'd like to see everyone. And please sign up today before about maybe before 7:45, the 7:45 sitting, because we have to kind of sort through it and be prepared to meet with you tomorrow. So we need a little bit of time for that. So if you can do that, then everyone sign up by 7:45. And make sure you sign up for a spot that's that doesn't conflict with your work meditation or bell ringing or something. And then whichever one you sign up for this round, in the next round, you'll see the other teacher. And so you'll see both of us. What we'll do is we'll simply cross out our names, and like I'll cross out Gil and put Inez there, and cross out Inez and put Gil there. So it's exactly the same time. It's everything's, you know, just same on the next round of 2 days. So hopefully that makes sense. And try not to get agitated about signing up. Thank you.